Gettysburg to Johnstown, Lebanon to Mount Pleasant. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the primary election is in the rearview mirror, and the battle lines are drawn for what promises to be a highly competitive general election season in Penns Woods. Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania is here with details. Counties and municipalities have the same rights to appeal property tax assessments as individuals. That according to a Common Pleas court decision. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And primary voters have teamed Governor Tom Wolf with Braddock Mayor John Fetterman for Lieutenant Governor. I'll have a town hall commentary on this latest awkward pairing by Democrats for the state's top offices. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The State Senate Education Committee this week passed a bill sponsored by State Senator John DeSanto, which would offer education savings accounts to students in low-achieving schools. ESAs are an education choice program that allows parents to customize their child's education by using a state-funded account. The program would be made available to students in schools performing in the bottom 15% statewide. The accounts could be used to purchase a range of education services, from tutoring and therapy to private school tuition. Similar legislation is making its way through the State House of Representatives. Recent polling conducted by the Commonwealth Foundation found two-thirds of state voters support such education savings accounts as a way to not trap students in underperforming schools simply because of where they live. Pennsylvania's natural gas industry has launched a Forge the Future campaign to attract businesses to Pennsylvania and to foster the creation of new businesses within the state. The Keystone State sits atop one of the most abundant, affordable supplies of natural gas and natural gas liquids in the world. That energy provides the building blocks for hundreds of manufactured products. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association points out that, quote, by strategically deploying Pennsylvania's vast energy resources, we have a unique opportunity to reignite manufacturing growth and jobs across the Commonwealth for years to come. A study on how to promote such job growth was conducted last year, and the coalition is now gathering input from business leaders. Once completed later this year, outreach and promotion of Pennsylvania's assets as a business location will get underway. And sad news this past week that former Ambassador Faith Ryan Whittlesey of Delaware County has passed away. Whittlesey was a strong supporter of Ronald Reagan's, who became a White House aide and was named the American ambassador to Switzerland. Here in Pennsylvania, Mrs. Whittlesey was in the vanguard of establishing a more conservative Republican Party, which at the time was dominated by moderates who largely opposed the Reagan agenda. Ambassador Whittlesey was 79 at the time of her death. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf and his new running mate, John Fetterman, will square off against State Senator Scott Wagner and Montgomery County businessman Jeff Bartos in the November general election. Voters across Penns Woods will also be electing a U.S. senator, congressman, and state legislators. Here to take a look at the matchups is Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. So, Leo, we had a highly contentious primary for governor. Got to be one of the more nasty gubernatorial primaries we've seen in recent history in Pennsylvania. So talk a little bit about how Scott Wagner and Jeff Bartos will stack up against Tom Wolf and John Fetterman.
It's going to be a very interesting contest. We are going to be able to draw very clear distinctions between both sides. Governor Wolf has amassed the reputation as being one of the most liberal governors in the country, has kind of advocated for many, many tax increases, and has more of a, say, scholarly approach, you know, in conversation and public appearances, whereas Scott Wagner is much more of a – I mean, he's much more of an everyman. He is not polished. I mean, he definitely has that blue-collar appeal.
Yeah, that sort of lack of polish, if you will, really actually ended up playing well for him in the primary because he was up against Paul Mango, who appeared to be overly polished. If you watched any of the debates in the primary, Paul Mango, in terms of if you were scoring a debate, really wiped out Scott Wagner in debating points. But at the end of the day, Scott really came off looking better because he related more to people.
Relatability is a really important quality that often gets overlooked. I forget what the exact numbers are, but something like 95% of people who have been victorious for president have been the person that more people have said they could see themselves going out for a beer with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that not necessarily that that's the best measure of a candidate, but I think that that relatability is really going to be a plus for Scott Wagner. I think the other thing that is really going to be interesting to see how it plays out is how the national players get involved in this race. Senator Wagner has been a vocal critic of public sector unions. We're going to very soon be seeing a decision come down from the Supreme Court on Janus that could affect public sector union membership. Senator Wagner has just been he's been really out in front in terms of fiscal conservative issues and things like that. And the left, public sector unions, and again, I repeat myself, really are going to see this as something that it's in their best interest to defeat Wagner. Governor Wolf is also going to be able to go to national donors and say, look, I'm the only Democrat up in a cycle in a state that Trump won. So I think you're going to see a lot of money coming in on both sides. I'm not sure what that does for the level of enthusiasm, particularly among Democrats. I mean, it's not a particularly interesting race. I mean, generally speaking, there's a big drop-off between your presidential and non-presidential years to favor the Republicans.
Well, and if you look at it, you talk about the fact that Democrats theoretically are more energized than Republicans, although we did not see any real turnout among Democrats in this primary. Their turnout was, percentage-wise, I believe, lower than Republicans. You have Tom Wolf, who, as you've mentioned, is sort of a scholarly demeanor. And you have Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. running for reelection. And the word charisma is never applied to him. So you have really, on the Democrat side, two really very boring candidates as opposed to Scott Wagner and Lou Barletta, both of whom are, especially Scott Wagner, as you mentioned, he's really a stellar speaker because he engages the audience. You may or may not agree with him, but he certainly engages you. So is that enthusiasm level going to be there in the fall, or is that maybe a wholly made up machination of the national media?
You know, that's a really interesting question. The polling data has actually been trending much more towards Republicans. At one point, the Democrats on the generic ballot nationwide had like a 10-point advantage. At this point, I think it's actually swung plus one or two to Republicans.
Yeah.
So the momentum at this point is favoring the Republicans. Although, I mean, it's really important to keep in mind that the election is in November. It's not even June yet. And that's 5 months is an eternity in politics.
Well, we also need to point out that in Pennsylvania, Democrats have a substantial voter registration edge. What, somewhere approaching 800,000, I believe, right now?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
We are talking with Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. We're talking about how the battlefield is shaping up for the general election, which is off and running here. It'll be held in November. And Leo, let's talk a little bit more about those congressional races. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania re-gerrymandered the congressional districts. I know they like to say they corrected the gerrymander, but if you know anything about these maps and you look at the map that the court has put out, it's more highly gerrymandered. Looks prettier, but more highly gerrymandered than the one before. And the congressional districts in the southeastern part of the state, in the counties outside of Philadelphia, they really redrew the lines to Democratic advantages. What's going to happen, particularly in that area, with Republican candidates?
It is going to be a long slog for Republicans in the southeast. It really looks like, as you mentioned, the way that these lines were redrawn, they were definitely drawn to the disadvantage of Republicans in the general election. I was looking at some data on it, and just kind of based on the percentages and statewide, the way that the districts were redrawn, the old districts, Republicans had a, I want to say it was like, it was a 12 to 6 advantage, just in terms of sheer numbers, voter registration. The way that they're drawn now, it actually changes that to Republicans still have an advantage. It's a, but it's now just a 10 to 8. So it looks like just on paper, Democrats are probably going to pick up at least 2 seats. That's probably a low estimate. I think that we're going to see somewhere between 3 and 4 seats flip over to the Democrats in Pennsylvania races.
Yeah, regrettably, I think that 3 to 4 might even be low. If you look at the fact that the Southeast was re-gerrymandered to favor the Democrats, we do have some competitive districts around the state. In the Lehigh Valley, where Charlie Dent has now resigned to become a CNN analyst. Surprise there. That race looks like it could be one of the more interesting ones.
Yeah, and it's not surprising that Charlie became the token Republican on CNN. That'll be a good fit for him. When you look at that district in particular, that's a really interesting one. It actually was changed to a Clinton. So Hillary Clinton won the new district by 1 point. So it's a really close in terms of voter performance, at least as it relates to the Trump-Clinton election.
Out in the western part of Pennsylvania, in northern Allegheny County, Beaver, and I believe Lawrence County, at least part of it, we have two incumbent congressmen now in the same district. That's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. That district was actually drawn in a way that Trump won it by 3 points, which isn't, that would kind of throw it into the toss-up or lean, probably more of a lean Republican district. The advantage, I think, here would probably go to the Republican incumbent, Keith Rothfuss. He is someone who you will see going out door-to-door, doing the fundraising, doing everything he needs to do in order to win that race. The Democrat in that seat is the gentleman who just won the special election, Connor Lamb, and he has managed to convince a lot of people that he is a moderate Democrat. So relatively pro-Second Amendment and personally pro-life, although pro-choice when it comes to legislation.
Let's talk for just a minute or so about the fact that we also have half of the Pennsylvania State Senate and the entire Pennsylvania House of Representatives up for re-election or election this year. And Republicans have historically high margins, a veto-proof majority in the state Senate, 120, 121 seats in the state House of Representatives. Democrats have any realistic chances of taking over either chamber?
No, the Republicans are probably going to lose some seats, particularly down in the Southeast. There were a couple of retirements, so there are a couple of non-incumbents in the Senate, although one of the non-incumbents happens to share the same last name as the previous senator because it was his dad. So has some positive benefit to it just in terms of name ID. There are also, a lot of competitive seats down in the Southeast in terms of House members who are really going to face some, I think there are going to be some really challenging races down there.
We have again been talking with Leo Knepper, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, just a word or two about the Citizens Alliance, and at what website can folks go to read more about you?
They can go to www.empowerpa.org. And I guess the best way to really think about us is almost as an accountability mechanism. We have a political action committee where we will support candidates in the primary and general election. And then we also do a good bit in terms of trying to advance policy as it relates to free market principles.
Leo Knepper from the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. Leo, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Taxing bodies won a round in Allegheny County Common Pleas Court recently over the arcane but hugely important issue of property tax reassessments. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi sort through the ramifications of the decision on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is my Allegheny Institute senior policy analyst, Eric Montardi. Eric, you wrote about a piece based on a Commonwealth Court of Common Pleas ruling that says that taxing bodies have a right to appeal property assessments on their own if they think that something is out of whack. Could you please give our readers some kind of insight onto how this came about and what it means?
Sure. There was a court case here in Allegheny County that was filed last summer by a couple in the city of Pittsburgh, bought a house. And like many people who buy new houses, when there hasn't been a reassessment for quite some time, and in Allegheny County's case, the reassessment values went into effect in 2013, the taxing bodies will look at the sale price and say, well, that's a good measurement of market value. Let's compare it to the assessment. And if there's some discrepancy by their criteria, and again, this varies typically from school district to school district and municipality to municipality, they will appeal them. So basically, the owners of the house decide to file a lawsuit against various parties, including the Pittsburgh Public Schools, which is the entity that brought the appeal, based off of some local language in the county ordinances and the rules of the appeals board that said, look, the taxing bodies don't have the right to look at sales prices. If you change the nature of your property, if you change the nature of the land, sure, that can lead to an appeal. But just going off of sale price alone is not something that justifies an appeal. Well, that language is what basically the court looked at to say this ran afoul of what exists in state law. Because there's the general assessment law, there's the assessment law that applies to counties of the second class, which is Allegheny County. There's a lot of precedent that basically says the taxing bodies have the same standing as a taxpayer to appeal the value of a property. And there's been attempts over the years, you know, at least back a decade, where the General Assembly had passed a law and then that was vetoed by the then governor. There's legislation pending currently that says, yeah, we want to give taxing bodies the right to appeal property values, but we don't want them doing it off of sales. And until you get a schedule of frequent reassessments, this practice is probably going to keep going on and on.
Well, I mean, and that's just it. You know, if you're going to have a system of property taxes, and let's face it, at least in our neck of the woods, school property taxes are by and largely done off of the value of a home. How best do you value a home but sales? It's what two people agree on when they sell a house as to what the buyer thinks it's worth, what the seller thinks it's worth. That's what you come to an agreement. So if you're going to have an assessment system based off of sales, you have to give either taxing body or property owner a chance to dispute the assessment based on that sales. And of course it gets very subjective. And we always said, well, if you think your assessment is too high as a homeowner, you can always appeal. But there is the second side of that coin, and that is that the taxing body can also appeal. You know, if you sell your house for $500,000, or you buy the house for $500,000 and it was previously on the books for $250,000, then the taxer is going to say, wait a minute, this property is worth twice than what we thought it was. We're going to appeal to the assessment board and see what goes. I believe the Court of Common Pleas is just reaffirming the fact that they have that right to do so.
Yeah, they did. And now this has been appealed up to Commonwealth Court, which is, you know, that's where here is an issue of something locally that might have impact statewide, but it's probably pretty doubtful. I don't know how high they're going to take this appeal. If they lose at Commonwealth Court, they could take it to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. But as you mentioned, I mean, really the issue is you have a base year assessment, and we know in some of these counties, they go back to the 60s, the 1970s, and then you have sales that occur after that. And that's why people feel like they've been unfairly targeted, because just because they happen to buy a house and they're dragged into an appeal, they might have bought pretty much an identical house to their neighbor, but because the neighbor hasn't sold the house, and the last time they were, you know, possibly in front of an appeals board, or you know, where the issue of the assessment came up, was when the countywide reassessment was done. So that's really the issue here. And as we've looked at this research over the years since Allegheny County's reassessment went into effect, we're trying to track the number of appeals to see what happens. Because, yeah, there's owners that will appeal, and they can sometimes be successful. Then there's taxing bodies that appeal, and they're sometimes successful. So what happened last year, so in 2017, is that overall the taxing body was more successful in terms of dollars, because on net, out of the 7,000 appeals, The value pre-appeal to post-appeal has gone up about $85 million. And then that, in turn, benefits the county, the municipality, and the school district, because when the value goes up, then they're going to be levying taxes upon that property and you know, netting more money.
This is something, and you've been working on this for years. You know, this goes back to the fact that as the Commonwealth as a whole, Pennsylvania does not have a system of assessments statewide. It's all pieced together county by county. So what's done in Allegheny is done, not done in Westmoreland, not done in Indiana or Armstrong. You have the, this patchwork. If the legislature were to come up with a system that says, okay, we're going to mandate that every 2 years, every 3 years, whatever it is, every 5 years, you must carry out a reassessment or even do it at a state level and say, look, here it is. It's going to be done. This may take some of the sting out of appeals from either side. But to this date, we have not seen any appetite from the legislature to tackle property assessments.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't say it better. I mean, it's basically, if you had some cycle, it would take out the sticker shock where you have the taxpayer who feels, well, when I see the envelope of my value and I open it up and I see that the value has gone up, I immediately think that, well, if the value has gone up 30%, then my taxes are going to go up 30%. And that, of course, sometimes is canceled out because of the millage rate requirements. Then the taxing bodies are looking at it as, well, the counties are the ones that are responsible for carrying out the reassessment, and they're not forced to do it. They can have a base year because the state says so. The school districts are the one that take the lion's share of the property taxes, so their incentive is to say, well, we have houses now that are selling at a greater clip on the sales price than they're assessed for, and they've met our criteria. And again, this is not to say they pick or choose. Most of these school districts, what they'll do is they'll just outline a criteria, and they say, if something sells for blank percentage more than its assessment, we're taking all of them in front of the appeals board. That's how you have the uniformity argument. It's either, you know, you get to some cycle and then you bring some regularity to process, or you just simply say, we're just not going to tax property and real estate anymore. We're going to shift to something else, and that's how we're going to fund local government.
Well, this is a very interesting topic, and while it's mostly here in Allegheny County, Western Pennsylvania, this is something that's going to eventually creep across the entire Commonwealth with all the counties, given that assessments are the way that schools fund their property taxes, and how this is going to play out going forward remains to be seen. You know, next step, like you said, Commonwealth Court, and after that, who knows, State Supreme Court. I would like to thank my colleague Eric for joining me today. I would like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you'd like more information on this or any other topic, I invite you to visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org.
And now, I'll have a town hall commentary. The meetup between the governor of Pennsylvania and his newly minted running mate at a York County diner was supposed to be a celebration of the new pairing. Instead, the photo had the aura of an incompatible couple on a blind date. The slightly built, scholarly governor sat passively on one side of the table. On the other side, staring off into the distance with a bored gaze, sat a hulking man who could easily pass for a WWE star. And so, Democrats Tom Wolf and John Fetterman launched the latest in a long string of mismatched tickets for Pennsylvania's highest offices. Over the decades, Democrats in particular have struggled with the unique system used to elect a lieutenant governor. In the primary, candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run in separate elections. Then they are paired together as a ticket in the general election. Voters cast but one ballot and get both. Thus, the electoral fate of each are intertwined. Republicans have generally handled this political oddity with little difficulty. State Senator Scott Wagner, early in the process, teamed with Montgomery County businessman Jeff Bartos, campaigning together for the Republican nominations, which each handily won. As a result, the Republican ticket begins the general election in sync and fully formed. Partly as a result of able ticket-making, the GOP has achieved considerable success in gubernatorial elections, despite a statewide voter registration deficit that at times has approached a million voters. In 1978, tough-on-crime former federal prosecutor Dick Thornburgh teamed with the son of a former governor, William W. Scranton III, to succeed the scandal-scarred administration of Governor Milton Schapp. 8 years later, Scranton essentially hand-picked State Senator Mike Fisher to be his running mate. Republicans endorsed and elected Tom Ridge and Mark Schweiker, and later Tom Corbett and Jim Colley. But Democrats have more resembled the old comedy troupe, the Keystone Cops, than a political party in nominating their statewide ticket. Pittsburgh Mayor Peter Flaherty was nominated for governor in 1978, defeating, among others, former State Auditor General Robert P. Casey Sr. Running for lieutenant governor was an Allegheny County biology teacher also named Robert P. Casey. He won the primary and then proved to be a drag on the ultimately losing ticket. The real Bob Casey ran again, was paired with Cambria County State Senator Mark Single, and won. But the relationship quickly turned sour as Casey remained a strong pro-life Democrat while Single embraced his party's pro-abortion orthodoxy. When Single ran for the U.S. Senate, the lack of support from his erstwhile political partner was palpable. And then there was the awkward pairing of Philadelphia Mayor Ed Rendell with State Treasurer Catherine Baker Knoll. Knoll, with high name ID from multiple statewide races, won the Democratic nomination for lieutenant governor. But Rendell kept her at arm's length during their time in office. Likewise, current Governor Tom Wolf has never gotten cozy with Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack. Actually, that's a bit of an understatement. Wolf was so aghast at Stack's antics, which included allegations he mistreated his staff and state police security detail, he ordered an investigation. Wolf ultimately revoked Stack's police detail and made it abundantly clear he did not want him on the 2018 ticket. The Democrats' ideal profile as a Wolf running mate was a woman from southeastern Pennsylvania. But candidates from that region, including Stack, crowded the primary, while Fetterman alone hailed from the West. Fetterman triumphed, and Tom Wolf got his wish to not have to go into the general election with Mike Stack as his running mate. But Fetterman could be a mixed blessing to the Democratic ticket. He is Harvard-educated, smart, and personable. But he also ran with the endorsement of socialist U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders and is aligned with a growing socialist movement on the ultra-left-wing fringe of the Democratic Party. With Tom Wolf already labeled the most liberal governor in America by no less an authority than the Huffington Post, the GOP can make the case that the Wolf-Fetterman ticket is well outside the state's political mainstream. One thing is certain, as Wolf-Fetterman go up against Wagner-Bartos, voters will have a choice in November as clear as the water in one of Penn's Woods' many mountain streams. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including 5DRadio.com in Fraser, along with WMCE-FM in Erie and WERG-FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Thank you.